an actor needs more than one facial expression?
Well, I think the history of the movie star proves that completely wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think to be a movie star is not the same thing as an actor.
Okay. Fair enough.
Does he have a cell phone face? I'm going to throw that in a pile of crap I don't care about alongside a vulgar auteur and elevated horror. Just nonsensical theories.
That's so funny.
Are garbage laden.
But you know, Conor McGregor has one face this whole movie.
He's just so excited to be
his first movie, and he's just happy to wreck stuff.
He is really happy to be there.
Getting paid so much more money to do the same thing without any chance of death or concussion.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Play Tasmanian Devil.
Play fight with Jake Gyllenhaal instead of getting your ass kicked by Khabib. Yeah, exactly.
I would be ecstatic.
Oh, gee, Khabib Nurmagomedov is going to kick the shit out of me, or I can play slappies with Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. I'm going to do that.
Well,
for sure.
Yeah.
But,
Connor, and I don't have to wear clothes. It's a win-win, right?
Connor's never unhappy. He's never angry. He's never sad. No. He is only just gleefully about to wreak destruction. The whole movie.
It warmed on me.
Sort of the central problem with this film, for my money.
Oh, yeah?
Is when I introduce myself, and sometimes, depending on the age of the person I introduce myself to, the film from 1989, we would be calling this film New Roadhouse for the duration of this episode.
Like
Neo.
Yes.
Neo Roadhouse.
Neo Roadhouse.
I'm just thinking like New Coke. It's like unsuccessful.
People who have seen 1989's Roadhouse get why I'm named after it. They're like, oh, okay, sure. Nobody's going to name their kid Dalton because of 2024 Neo Roadhouse.
No, I hope they name him Elwood.
But they might name him Knox.
They might name him Knox, yeah.
And that is sort of the central problem.
I grew up with people who would name him Knox.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
You don't come out of this movie excited about the character of Dalton. You mm-hmm. do come out of this movie excited about the character of Knox. And that is a problem. Like, that's just a big problem.
Yeah, there's a certain demographic of white folk.
They were smart. They knew they needed a heavy that really shined. Because that's such a big part of the first movie. Is mm-hmm. that stunt performer who I don't think did a ton. I forget his name. But is just, like, clearly a guy who really knows how to fight. And they just, like, gave him a necklace, gave him an earring, and let him say insane lines like, I used to fuck guys like you in prison. And boom, that's a classic villain. And they wisely calibrated. They needed something like that for this movie. And I'm with you, Dustin.
Overcorrected.
Yes. Conor McGregor is taking up too much oxygen.
I wonder
for this
if
movie.
He got more added.
Because
there could be that chance of like, oh, he's having a lot of fun with this. Let's give him a couple more scenes.
I mean, that stinger at the end just feels like Doug Liman being like, you're just eating.
You're getting your own movie, baby.
You're eating, buddy. Here you go. Yeah.
Make room for the sequel.
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks. Yes. Hire us, Hollywood. We can write this stuff.
Dustin, do your job.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast. We gather around a table. We discuss the films you will never, ever, ever, never in the history of ever discuss in a Film Studies course. And we are back to our real fare. That is right. We're looking at the 2024 remake of the classic Roadhouse. I'm still Dustin.
I'm still Arthur.
Wow. 35 years after the original. Wow.
You are?
No, I'm 33 still, damn it.
Okay. No, who are you, though?
Oh, I'm Dalton. Who cares?
Yeah, okay. Named after this movie.
No, but the other one. Don't say that. Nope. No.
Always going to specify.
Oh, gosh, darn it.
His parents saw into the future and named him after.
Oh, buddy. In case you're tuning into the show for the very first time, this is an analysis show, not a review show, despite all the better intentions to do otherwise. It's an analysis show, and we are going to spoil this movie, but we will wait till the last two-thirds of the show to do so. What we'll do first is a synopsis, which will be spoiler-free, let you know what it's about in case you hadn't seen the original. Then we'll move on to quick thumbs-up, thumbs-down reviews as to whether or not we like it, which ought to be entertaining, and then we'll move on to a little exercise called explaining the syllabus, which will probably involve thematic or stylistic spoilers, but not necessarily plot spoilers. And if there are any plot spoilers, they themselves will be quite light. We'll play music to let you know we've gotten down to business, and that's when all spoiler bets are off. So there you go. With that, Arthur, delight us with the synopsis, please.
A roadhouse manager hires a disgraced ex-UFC champion to stave off the rougher clientele who have recently made the locale their haunt.
Indeed. Okay. So,
it's rare that we get to do this, But Dustin is also a virgin viewer.
We're all virgins, yes.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
So as we've gotten this occult together, we'll throw him onto the sacrificial table first to tell us why he doesn't like 2024's Roadhouse.
Oh, you assume so much.
What works, what doesn't. Speak on it.
Okay, I'm trying to think of what works.
Do you like the fights?
No.
You don't like the sort of the what the camera's doing to sort of put you in the subjective point of view of getting your face punched?
Occasionally that's okay, but most of the fights I actually kind of hate. I don't like the way that they're speeding up the action in order, and so the fights don't work. Jake Gyllenhaal is wasted.
Yeah.
Jessica Williams is wasted. I think maybe Conor McGregor, despite our conversation earlier, I think probably he has some range. I think he got a direction note and said, just smile the whole time and go. And that's all he does. Prance and smile.
He's strutting.
And no, that doesn't work. I think the weird changes between types of film stock doesn't quite work. I don't think the score's really all that much to scream about. I think the set's underused. There's not a Sam Elliott kind of character to come in, which I kept waiting for and I wanted, and it didn't happen. And so that was a missed opportunity. Yeah, it sucks. What do you think, Arthur?
Dalton, what do you think?
It's fine. It's, you know, it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been worse.
It could have been so much worse. And I'm kind of like, I'm leaning on that. Gyllenhaal, a coward for not going ass out. I'm going to get that out of the way right up top.
I think so,
you
too.
You put that much work into your body and you're going to not show buns like Swayze did? Baby shit. Get out of here. McGregor, good job, buddy.
McGregor had a no-compete clause.
Well, yeah. if I was smuggling around a couple of honey hams like freaking Conor McGregor was, I too would be like, non-compete. This is the ass of the movie, folks. It's fine. I agree the fights are...
Maybe they shot Jake Gyllenhaal's butt and they said, and he said, no, I just, no.
No,
I can't, no.
Patrick Swayze's Dalton... Mononymous Dalton, by the way. I think on his medical record they might show a first name, but we never hear it. Is a real character. He's a movie character from the cocaine 80s.
Right.
He's got a philosophy. He's got a philosophy.
The cocaine 80s.
Not a philosophy degree, a PhD in philosophy, a doctorate. My man has studied and instead spends his time being the most well-known bouncer in the entirety of North America.
In a world in which everyone knows bouncers.
Well, everyone knows bouncers and everyone knows bar musicians. Like, Roadhouse takes place in a fictional world with its own rules, almost as, like, opaque and yet very clear. It's like John Wick. It is a proto-John Wick in many ways, to my mind. Dalton is, like, an exciting character, an interesting character with real, like, emotional stakes. You care about the people he cares about. You are invested in his romantic relationships, his friendships. Elwood Dalton is not interesting. He has this deep rage demon inside of him that we never learn anything about. Dalton using lethal force in 1989's Roadhouse is like a big deal. It is an escalation of the film. When Dalton decides to start really fucking people up in this movie, it's just like kind of glib and silly. And like, I was giving this movie points for not being sort of marvel-y with its jokes throughout. I was like, okay, they're being sort of knowing and self-aware with their alluding to Western tropes and stuff. So they're like kind of commenting on what a stock movie the original is. I'm like, okay, this is, but there's just like, Conor McGregor says be nice during the climactic fight for no other reason than that's a thing from the original. And that kind of shit drives me crazy. I'm just like,
you want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts. Like, let Elwood Dalton have a philosophy or don't. Like, do something with that whole be nice thing or jettison it from the movie entirely. Don't give me this fucking Easter egg stuff. I'm going to lose my mind. I don't know. The fights are just better than the original. They just took dudes who learned how to fight or knew how to fight and let them beat up on each other in a medium shot. That's how you shoot a fight scene. There are some, this is like pulling from the Scott Adkins, Michael Jai White, like Undisputed 3 school, which is like, there's some cool camera moves in here.
There's some flourishes that are okay.
Yeah. But they're doing it for like every single fight scene constantly. And it's just like really distracting. And they're not, I'm sure Gyllenhaal could beat me up.
Yeah.
I don't think he really learned how to fight super well for this. And like, I don't know, you watch Roadhouse won, and like,
well, I mean, if he did or not, we don't know.
We don't know.
The movie didn't tell us.
You're right. Yeah. We don't get enough like medium shots of him actually, like long medium shots of him fighting.
Right.
We just don't. It is like he may have very well, you're right, Dustin, done a ton of martial arts training for this film, and we'll simply never know because the film doesn't give him a chance to show like what. It's just not good. It's not bad choreography, but it's pretty uninteresting. I agree, I love Jessica Williams. She's always awesome and just totally wasted in this.
Okay, she's so funny and she's not funny at all.
Doesn't really get anything to do.
MVP goes to Mo, the broke arm biker.
Arturo Castro from Broad City. I love him.
Very funny.
Yeah, I love Arturo. He's in that Apple show that Joseph Gordon-Levitt like starred and directed in, Mr. Whatever. It's about a teacher. He plays his roommate. Arturo Castro is like, I keep waiting for him to really start. He kind of pops in this, and I'm like, keep waiting for him to be in a big movie where he really gets to pop, because he's so, he's like really funny, but has good pathos too. I would agree. I think he is definitely like the star of the movie, not the star of the movie, the person that like runs away with MVP. His just being like, oh, you know, hey, these guys suck, I'm out of here. Like, so good.
It's so polite.
He's so polite. Well, and I guess like that's what's frustrating. Like when that character is asked to explain what Elwood Dalton is like, he's like, I don't know. He's like Mr. Rogers and he beats the shit out of you. Like, that's interesting. Give me more of like Gyllenhaal's Elwood Dalton as sort of like mild mannered and kind of sense it. Like, give us some more of that like martial artist psychology. And like, explain to us more like why he has this deep seated rage demon that like made him kill a coworker at work. Like, that is what happened, which is less interesting than a dude like hooking up with somebody, finding out they're married, and then like ending up in a lethal altercation because of that. Like, yeah, it's pretty rote and, you know, uses a woman as a prop off screen. But like, I'm sorry, it's still more interesting than the UFC backstory. I don't know. There's like a cool movie in here, but look, if I'm Jeff Bezos and Doug Liman comes on my yacht and shows me this movie and says, please put it in theaters, I'm not saying yes, dude. Sorry. It's not that good. And you know, they used to let people blow shit up in the 80s and they simply don't do it anymore. And it shows. Arthur, you're probably the warmest on this, but you're not like over the moon for it either. What works for you other than Conor McGregor?
I really like it. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun time. I like Gyllenhaal. I like his self-serious, quirky little thing he does. I think it's a fun bit. I think it is very much a throwback to kind of classic Western hero, you know, John Wayne-ish, you know, roll into town, say some quips, do your thing. I think it's kind of true to that genre in that way. I like the fights. I think they're fun. I like the kind of visual flourish Liman brings to it. He's, you know, an interesting director, kind of jumping from piece to piece, doing different things. And obviously, I don't think his best features are probably his, you know, solely on him. You know, I think of something like Live, Die, and Repeat, which is just a strong concept with strong performances, which really helps that, you know. So he's very much a sort of journeyman director who's very competent in what he does. I think I like the Roadhouse music. Like, I like
music
those
is good
bits.
Yeah.
I think that stuff's fun.
I'm glad they bring back the musical performances from the original. Yeah, I think that's a big part of the secret ingredient of 89.
Yeah, and I do miss, like, I will say my big lament is like that John Wick element of the original. Of like, there's a world of bouncers and they all have these like mythic backstories of how they came to be and the kind of legends that travel alongside them. I miss that part of it because I think that's what makes the original so like, if we all sat down and recorded a podcast 3 days after watching the original Roadhouse in 1989, you know, 3 days after it's in theaters, we probably would have maybe similar responses.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. If I'm a critic in 89, I'm probably like having a much different reaction because I am living through the cocaine 80s and having to deal with all these bullshit movies and not getting to like appreciate the special ones for what they are.
Yeah. And so like, not to take any, because I like the original Roadhouse more. I think it deals a lot more with this kind of small town politics stuff a lot better.
Big time.
The world building stuff, it does a lot better. But I think this is just a fun time. And there's a point in here at which somebody, you know, And there's the big roadhouse fight scene that's kind of the apex of the film.
Bar fight!
Yeah, that's the moment where it really, I mean, this is just like pro wrestling the movie in a lot of ways. And it's like over-the-top villains, over-the-top fights. Like, and looking at, like, I think it was Matt Singer who said, like, you know, the original Roadhouse found a life in Cable. And, like, this movie would, too. And so, like, there's just something about, like, if this was on and I was like, it's a rainy Sunday or I'm up way too late and it's just on, I would watch it because it's engaging. It's fun. It's silly. It's over the top and goofy. And I think the original Roadhouse is too in its own way. Right.
Sure. Oh, totally.
And so like there's that about it. And so I like Gyllenhaal. I you all have valid flaws and criticisms of the film, and I think that's fair. But I think if you're looking for something just to relax and unwind, I think it's serving that purpose, especially if you don't maybe have buy into the original, right?
Sure, sure.
And a lot of it does kind of sound like AI may have written the script in places.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's those things about it, but it's still a good time. I don't know. Like I said off air, I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, still struggling to remember the names of these movies now, this week, and this feels a lot more competently put together and structured, and I would have rather seen this in theaters than Frozen Empire. Right?
Yeah.
And still, it's a middling movie, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's not good, but I had a good time.
I like Gyllenhaal here. I want to clarify that. Because I like him as a performer, and I think him doing...
I do, too. He can do more, and he didn't.
He can.
He did.
And he has in the... I don't know
I don't think he needs to. I don't think he gets given more to do.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
He just doesn't have... I forget her name, but...
The fault's not him. It's the script, is what I want to say.
The doc in this one. Ellie. Yeah, no chemistry. Like, Kelly Lynch and Swayze, you're like, oh, damn. They're heating things up.
Yeah.
I just never felt it in
this. That's just a fault in the system in 2024, I think.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm with Dustin too, though. Like, I miss the mentor character. I just I miss those friendships and connections.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I miss feeling like the characters were like.
And to me, that's probably the biggest thing. Is like, I do wish this had like to be so over the top, but to also have it so kind of set in the real world in a way.
Yeah,
is where it kind of disconnects because that John Wick element of the original is what makes that movie, I think, so special.
Yeah, I think it was David Chin on his Decoding Everything Substack. I think that's where I read this. But he was like, you know, going into a Roadhouse remake, you wonder, is it going to lean into the camp of the original? Is it going to go grittier and more realistic? And the answer is yes, was what he said.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that is sort of the problem. Is it
has this like refined, polished look, but also wants to be a cartoon.
It wants to be cartoon and gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of I get why they thought they could do that, because the original Roadhouse kind of wears a couple of different tones and navigates them pretty well. And I just don't know that this like has mastery of tone quite like that original does. But you're right, though. I mean, I've got obviously like a whole childhood nostalgia buy-in for the original that I don't have for this. And that's, I'm trying really hard to like take that into perspective and, you know, account for that. But
look, I will watch Roadhouse 2. Hard Knocks looks for you, or you know, whatever is. There's also an interesting thing, and this could be moving in that, but like Roadhouse culture, I don't think exists.
Yeah,
right. In the same sort of sense that it maybe did in the 80s.
Is the original movie in Florida too?
No, it's
in
Missouri.
It's Missouri. So I mean, the Floridian sort of world of it, the sort of Jimmy Buffett kind of world, I kind of buy that.
I'm fine with it being in the Keys.
I buy that.
Transplanting the setting, I don't have an issue with at all.
I want there to be a friendship or an antagonism between Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Williams.
There's nothing between the two of them.
I want there to be a reason for this romance other than he was cute and sort of quippy at the ER.
Yeah.
In the romantic plot. I just want something.
Yeah.
And yeah, it let me down a little bit. You know, there was a moment because I didn't believe in any of the relationships and I didn't believe in any of the connections. My wife was watching this with me. And
fan of the original?
She liked the original.
Okay.
But we got into about the point where he goes after a biker has met an untimely demise by nature.
Yeah, he does.
And he goes and visits the home of the biker club or whatever it is. And I said to her, if I wasn't watching this for the show, this is the point I'd be bored and turn it off. And that's really where I was. I'm like, the action was fun, but there wasn't anything in between it. And that everything that happened in between was just bleh. And that's the way I felt. It's blurg.
Blurg and blah.
Blurg, blah, and eh. That's where you are, right? It's like you're more of a, eh. Yeah.
No, Arthur's kind of more of a, huh.
Huh.
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I'd watch it again.
Yeah.
Is okay. Where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I will watch a sequel.
And I don't know that I
might watch a sequel.
I don't know.
If it's more Conor McGregor, yeah.
I mean, I'll think about it.
I do think like, sorry, don't.
No,
I do think there's a weird, I think there's a way in which you could have used Post Malone, sorry, Austin Post.
Yes.
As that sort of Sam Elliott figure in a way.
That would have been great.
Or to leave him back in.
If like, he come back, yes.
Or even just more of Lucas Gage, who I've liked in a couple of things. He's the blonde guy that works at the bar.
Oh, right on.
He's been in a couple of things.
The kind of protege bouncer.
Yes. Not the guy with the boxing background that they hire later. But yeah, the first guy. One, yeah. Because more of him, I don't know. Yeah. And well, and speaking of Billy's, Billy Magnuson, who I love and is like one of our great millennial shithead actors, those kind of guys, as Ben Brandt. Yeah. He's like, okay. He's pretty good, but like, I don't know. Even Ben Gazzara in the original, just like Billy Magnuson is like a guy that like, he's kind of built. Like you could see him having a physical confrontation with Dalton, which you cannot see in the original. Yeah. It's like very silly at the end of the original when he meets the big bad.
And Joaquin Del Almeida, the sheriff dad character, mm-hmm. that actor has range.
He's been around.
And yeah. he can, sheriff big dick.
And yes, I do. And he is he can be terrifying.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's not. And it's again, I blame the script. I don't blame him. I blame the script. So okay, there you go, dear listener. We're just talking about what we like and don't like about the movie because I'm afraid that might be most of what we have to say about this movie. However, we're going to move on to the next part of our show, which is College Paying the Syllabus, and Arthur is going to explain what that's all about.
Sure, I will. Expanding the Syllabus is a thought experiment wherein we, the host, assemble an academic course or module within a course based around the assigned viewing for the week and adjacent texts that could be books and articles or tangentially related films, stories, video games, albums, performance art. Cereal boxes. I don't know.
Pogs.
Yep. Pogs. Valid.
Pogs. Yes.
Yes. Pogs. If you're watching this 5 years after the original,
Arthur, do you have any a syllabus assembled for us on this movie?
Yeah, I went the easy way out. There's this sort of meta kind of narrative or meta theme within the film. Dalton's already alluded to of the Western and kind of plotting this as a Western, and it's called out as. Dalton visits a bookshop, which I don't believe exists in the Glass Key. I don't see that being
there's a lot of reading going on.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Well, look, he's got to have a second job. It doesn't exactly pay the bills.
It's a labor of love.
Yes. Truly the most improbable thing in this film. is a bookstore in Florida.
Get their asses, honestly.
But the young girl working there who befriends Dalton within 5 minutes alludes to like plot Western plots and him being sort of this Western outsider coming in to clean up this town. So I was thinking neo-Westerns, and I was thinking about this because I thought I did it recently. And it was back when we did Escape from New York. And so this could be in a Westerns class, a genres class, whatever you want to do. So I'm just going to rerun through that syllabus and then add a few titles to it to kind of update it since then. So again, we'd start with Bad Day at Black Rock, Spencer Tracy, kind of a noir neo-Western mix, which is a lot of it's a solid movie. If you've not seen it, it's very much worth your time. Assault on Precinct 13, which is near and dear to this show's heart. Midnight Run, Copland, Gran Torino, No Country for Old Men, Logan, Hell or High Water, Old Man and the Gun. That was sort of the initial run on that, which was on the Escape from New York episode. So I'd add Escape from New York into that syllabus as well now to sort of expand on it. And then from there, I'd add a couple more titles. I want to talk about Crazy Heart.
Sure.
The Jeff Bridges film where he plays an aging country musician. And
kind of
talk about the update on The Singing Cowboy, which is a pretty dominant fixture in early Western with Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. So we'd take a look at Crazy Heart and the sort of update on that trope there. We'd take a look at Mad Max Fury Road and the kind of allusions to maybe Stagecoach, where we've just got this long chase sequence that's playing out in front of us across this wasteland, this Western wasteland. And then we do Sicario as well, sure. and sort of dealing with, you know, outlaws and antiheroes and people trying to keep the law amidst all of this chaos and in a very kind of Western, the modern Western setting mm-hmm. of the American Southwest. And obviously Ty Sheridan kind of the Western is ingrained in his DNA for better or worse.
Yeah.
And so thinking of Wind River, thinking of Yellowstone, having all that kind of in the back of the mind as well.
Who actually directed Hell or High Water? Because I know it's not him.
That is a great question, and I can't tell you that off the top of my head.
Don't worry about it. You keep talking. I'll do some research.
Yeah, and so that's what I talk about, though, is just and really, you know, this. I did teach a genres class last year, last fall. I don't know time.
It's a flat circle.
But you tell me about it. But in that, we got to the Western, and one of the kind of discussion questions and the prompts within the text is, you know, do you have to have that kind of period element for it to be a Western? You know, what is that sort of defining character, or is it all these other tropes, and can they be absent of that? And so that's the thing I think we'd begin to continue to explore in here, is that idea of, you know, in this, he's going east, right? And he's gone east to Florida, to the Keys. And so... but he is this sort of lone outsider brought in as this kind of mercenary hired gun, which is very much a kind of classic Western plot. And I thought a lot, I don't know if you guys have ever seen or are familiar with Support Your Local Gunfighter. There's a pair of Western comedy satires starring James Garner. He does Support Your Local Sheriff, mm-hmm. and then he does Support Your Local Gunfighter. And in Support Your Local Gunfighter, he shows up in town. And the sheriff there thinks he is a hired gun, that he is the sheriff is hired to kind of clean up the town of an outside threat that's been taking place. And James Garner goes along with it because money.
Mm-hmm. James Garner.
And so it's like it's a fun, like, I'm not actually this person, but I'm doing this thing for you. And then, of course, the real mercenary is going to show up, right? Which is kind of the third act conflict. But those pair of movies, I was thinking about that a lot. And there are a pair of movies that are just a lot of fun and get to poke fun at a lot of those kind of Western tropes as well. But anyway, that's what I would take a look at and talk about is the neo-Western.
Very, very fun. Very fun. What do you say, Dalton? What would you do for a syllabus for this movie?
Well, I do want to quickly mention that the director of Hell or High Water is David McKenzie, who did Start Up, the prison movie with Ben McKenzie and, oh my God, what's that? Jack O'Connell. Or Ben Mendelsohn, not Ben McKenzie.
That's a weird coincidence. And then
Outlaw King. Didn't we cover that on the show?
Oh, yeah.
About Robert the Bruce with Chris Pine.
With Pine.
That was what he did after. And he's been working in TV since then. Yeah. He did two episodes of that Under the Banner of Heaven miniseries. God, he worked forever before he got Start Up, which is what I first became aware of him from. He did that Spread movie where Ashton Kutcher plays a gigolo. Anne Heche. Bad movie. Anyway, my syllabus. I'm going to be revisiting a class that I've already done as well, Arthur. So back when we did A Woman, a Gun, and a Noodle Shop, I did sort of a class on the international adaptation.
Nice.
I think that would be a module, and sort of this module would be a class on the 80s remake. And the sort of the larger framework of the class is like adaptations and readaptations, or remakes and readaptations.
Of movies.
Yeah. So sometimes would be for this module specifically, we're just talking straight remakes. Obviously, we could do readaptations like, you know, multiple swings at True Grit, for instance, multiple swings at Let the Right One In. Multiple swings at Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. These are some of these I mentioned on Woman, a Gun, and a Noodle Shop. But specifically for this module, I really just want to focus in on sort of the 80s genre canon and how we have been so desperate to recapture lightning in a bottle for the last, let's say, 15 years or so, 10 to 15.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. I'm specifically thinking of like the RoboCop remake, the Total Recall remake. Obviously, Total Recall is a movie from 1990. Don't get in my fucking mentions about it. That's an 80s movie. Come on.
Yeah.
That's a Paul Verhoeven 80s movie. I don't know what to tell you. Starship Troopers is a 90s movie. Total Recall is an 80s movie. I don't make the rules. I just watch the movies. Red Dawn was the other one I had written down. Conan, Fright Night. These are some other ones I had written down. But again, just sort of looking at the 80s genre canon, I guess you could, what else could you bring in? I mean, God, there's so many of these have been, I guess you could bring in The Thing, but that's sort of a readaptation thing too, because the 80s thing is a remake, and then the 2011 thing is a prequel of the remake. So that's sort of more nebulous to shove in this class. I really do want to focus on specifically like these attempts to try to, we could do 2016 Ghostbusters and 84 Ghostbusters. But again, I don't want to do like Denis Dune and Lynch's Dune. Obviously we already did a class on that recently. And again, like readaptation is not kind of what we're focused on here. We're focused on like, what is it about the bombast of the 80s and by extension, the early 90s, you know, sort of the era taken down by Last Action Hero.
You're trying to recapture success, not trying to correct a mistake.
We're not trying to, you know, breathe new life into a story that still has relevance to the modern age. We're trying to do
cash
it again.
In.
We're trying to cash in and do it again.
Oh, did you say Overboard?
Oh, I didn't even think about Overboard. That's right.
Red Dawn.
Red Dawn I have on my list.
Red Dawn, yeah.
Which is, yeah, that's a, I mean, that's already a bad movie that you could have done something interesting with. you know, what about a movie where we're finally liberated by from the boot of capitalism by the glorious People's Republic of China? That had been a movie that got people talking. That's all I'm saying.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels gets remade in that Anne Hathaway, Rebel Wilson.
Yes.
Is it?
That's true.
I can't remember what it's called.
I can't remember what it's called
either.
What
are you talking about,
though? Yes, I do know what you're talking about. That's interesting. I didn't even thought about that. Because I was thinking specifically about sort of the genre pictures, not kind of capers or comedies. Mm. But yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, there's...
Comedy's not a genre.
Well, it
is a caper.
Genre.
Not a genre.
I guess I meant like sort of the action.
Get him.
That's sort of these violent pictures.
Arthur is pulling no punches today.
I was specifically thinking
State
about...
State of Florida, look out.
The reason I was like thinking about like...
2 weeks ago, 9/11, this week, Florida.
He can't be stopped. He's a menace, and I love it. I guess I was just thinking about like RoboCop, Total Recall. It's just sort of like, especially... This one's interesting, right? Because they didn't sand the edges off quite like they did with those PG-13 remakes of very R-rated movies, right? This is an R-rated movie still. But also, they sanded the edges off, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is barely an R-rated movie.
I mean, it's R-rated because of language and...
They drop some F-bombs, yeah.
Not even gore.
No, it's not really that violent.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, there's some juicy squibs in the 1989 Roadhouse. There's some glorious squibs in that movie. And this is like... Fairly tame.
I mean, it's probably rated R because of McGregor's butt, right?
No, it's probably the F-bombs.
The dual butts. I think the doubling of the butt is probably...
The doubling of the butt?
Yeah. Second butt?
Second
you can get
butt.
Away with one ass shot
but yeah.
in a PG-13?
But if you double, yeah, I think that's probably going to be over the line.
I know
the quad cheek rule.
The quad cheek rule.
I know I referenced this last week. But I was watching Last Action Hero, and I forgot about the gag where the kid like writes down a swear and shows it to Arnie, and he's like, "Hey, say this." And he's like, "Grow up." I was like, "No, come on, say it." So you can't because this movie's PG-13.
That's funny.
It's a good gag. So I don't know. Roadhouse is like interesting in this conversation because they were like, "Well, let's they clearly know that making Roadhouse PG-13 is not something that's going to be popular, but they still sand the edges off, and it is just it does make you wonder about." 80s production versus 2020s production and sort of what you can get away with when everyone's on cocaine versus what you can get away with in a industry that is much more concerned about safety.
Done away with the cocaine budget in 2024.
Well, and you know, sure we have, but then you've got, you know, Cord Jefferson pointing out the Oscars, like we're still making $200 million budget movies. We're just not making a lot of like mid-budget movies that probably are going, you know, 5 to 20 over what they should have been made at.
I don't know the budget on this film, do we?
No, we certainly don't. And Amazon probably will never let us. Every time I see the MGM logo with an Amazon company underneath it,
I think, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
It's sad, isn't it?
Well, I mean... They weren't exactly like good people over there. You know what I mean? It's not,
sure.
But yeah, not that they're owned by good people now. It's just, yes, I know what you mean, but also it does kind of make me laugh a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like
the studio of The Wizard of Oz is just,
owned by the same company that delivers you your toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, look, we're entering an era where the industry is going to be run by, you know, tech companies and venture capital and, this movie sort of is interesting as like I feel like this is like a midpoint. I don't know what's next, but this sort of like feels like the last of one of these, or the last time that they're going to try to recapture the magic of a weird 80s cult action hit.
Oh, buddy. I don't know.
Well, we'll revisit this conversation when they remake Starship Troopers. Right? Okay. Yeah, Arthur, how would you teach this?
I already did.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, it's Dustin's turn.
Can I teach it?
If you must.
It's just going to be me and Dalton.
Yeah.
Haters out of the club.
I want to do a class like doing a lot with a little. Like really trying to maximize a middling kind of budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
As a course.
It's a very good course.
Yeah. And so one of the sections I want to do is make it look great with a little bit. And so there'd be two halves to the module. The first half, we talk about film noir, which is famously mid-budget movies that are, you know, contemporary pieces, but they're doing everything they can with the camera and the shadows and the chiaroscuro lighting and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we'll do kind of a real fast crash course film noir bit, and then talking about action movies that are mid-budget that they're just trying to do whatever they can, and I think they're really making an effort at style here in this movie. The other films that I would pair with it, I think, in that module would be The Rundown with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Sure.
And so it's again real stylish for an action movie. That's real kinetic that it does there. And then the other movie I think I would use is Hellboy 2 The Golden Army, directed by Guillermo del Toro, which is a comic book action film that again has a lot of style and a lot of sort of like deep production design. Rather than sort of kinetically moving the camera, they're really putting a lot of effort into production design there for it to give it some layers and some texture. I think Hellboy 2 being much more successful than either. Well, I mean, I really like The Rundown a lot. I think it's really fun to watch, and I don't know that Roadhouse 2024 is quite as successful, but yeah, that would be the thing. And then other movies, again, where you don't have a whole lot of money, let's talk about science fiction efforts, let's talk about comedy efforts, let's talk about ways in which you're just trying to make that dollar go as far as you possibly can.
How much do you think Hellboy 2 The Golden Army was made for?
I don't know, but I would say it's about a $50 million, $75 million movie, somewhere in
you're
that range.
You're closer to 75. Yeah, it's sub 100. It's like 80 to 85.
Is it 85? Yeah. It's sub 100.
There's a range. Yeah. It's for a comic book movie is, especially in that era, pretty surprising.
Yeah. So, you know, mid-level budget still. So I think that'd be fun, though. And that would be the approach. And again, sort of making more with less. I don't know what I would title the course, but I've been thinking a little bit about that in general, and I think this movie would fit well into that.
Should introduce you to my close personal friend, Chad Stahelski, director of the John Wick films, which I think are a great example of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Because even by the time...
Especially
the first one. But I mean, like, even by the time you get to 4, which is, like, released as a blockbuster, that's still, like, a $70 million movie, which obviously it's R-rated, so that's going to keep the budget lower, but still.
Well, and obviously horror itself is going to be a significant part of this, you know, because that's exactly the formula for horror, is, like, to get as a shoestring and really make a return on it. And look at some of those successes.
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Blair Witch.
Late Night with the Devil.
Hellraiser.
No.
So. Speaking of movies that used AI.
Ooh.
That's a good segue probably, right?
Yeah. I think it's now time to get down to business.
It's business. It's business time. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh. It's business. It's business.
Now, do we know, is it just in that lawsuit being filed by the original screenwriter, but that we don't really know AI was used on this screenplay? It's just something that
looked like an accusation.
Just an accusation
I haven't. It was the first time hearing of it. Yeah, the first time hearing this week a lot about.
It's he AI said, she said, though, Ryan, at this point.
I believe that that's the case. And I know part of it is like basically this movie should have come out before it did for MGM to like be able to keep remaking it. It was like right up to the 11th hour of the rights reverting back to the original screenwriter. Mm. And that's sort of like the larger business issue taking place here. But yeah, I believe in the lawsuit, there's also allegations made by him.
So there's a Variety article that says this isn't the first time the AI accusation has been floated. Producer Joel Silver was fired from Amazon in November 2023 over verbal abuse. Sources told Variety that the producer was actually being penalized for raising concerns over the streamer's use of AI to complete Roadhouse. Amazon strongly denied the allegations. I'm probably going to err on the side of the artist, considering it's Amazon.
Yep.
I mean, not that Joel Silver is a good guy, but like
it's Amazon.
I tend to think that they
can bury it, sweep it under the rug because
they
have
the bad
money.
Guys. Yep. Yeah.
Well, and I think we're going to see more and more of this, and it's going to be a lot of people saying it's not a big deal, and a lot of people saying this is a slippery slope. And then a lot of companies denying because they know how unpopular it is going to be to do this. Late Night with the Devil, I'm like a little bit more willing to give leeway because that's, speaking of shoestring budgets, that's such a shoestring budget that I'm like, okay, like, I hate that they didn't pay a graphic designer.
But
I get it. Couldn't afford to pay a graphic designer.
Are we talking
designer.
About the poster on Late Night with the Devil?
There are four or so intertitles.
Like, we'll be right
back.
Yeah,
they're just like classic vintage, we will be right back, Halloween themed images that are used multiple times throughout. Mm-hmm. Anytime it cuts to ad break during the movie. Mm-hmm. They use these, you've seen title cards thousands of times.
So they like they're AI generated. That kind of thing or something I don't
and
care.
There's a bunch of people. I'm sure, if I'm an artist struggling to make money, yeah, I'm probably mad.
I would like to, but I'd rather somebody got paid to do it. Yeah.
Also, I don't know the budget. I don't know the constraints. I don't know.
Eight production companies on that movie. I imagine. Buddy, yeah.
Yeah.
We literally
I watched the opening, I'm like, good Lord.
I laughed out loud in my theater.
By the fourth or fifth one.
When Future Productions Established 2068 or whatever popped up, I cackled.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was a gag. Yeah. I really didn't think it was.
Is it on Shudder yet?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it? I don't think so.
Oh,
think
really?
It's later this year, I think.
Oh, okay. I assume that's where you watched it was on Shudder.
No, I had a screener.
You had a screener. Okay. It's worth catching.
I'm going to.
It's better than this movie.
I'm sorry. I missed it.
By a lot.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But I think we're going to see more of these allegations over the next 10 years. And I think it's probably going to take 10 years before studios are like, yeah, we used AI. Who cares? Get over it. Like,
what are you going to do?
Exactly. And they're going to be really scared about it for a few years and then they're going to start ramping up.
I mean, the loudest voice is also the smallest voice, right? I mean, the general audience isn't going to care.
No.
I mean, end of the day.
Yep.
If I told 20 people that AI was used in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire to complete the third act, they're gonna be like, what's a third act?
Yeah,
like they're not gonna care.
Yeah,
and that's where we're at. And unfortunately, I mean, that's plagiarism and AI use on the whole is, you know, if I could, you know, at my last company, if I could have told my boss, yeah, I can use AI to do most of our department's work, they'd be like, okay, let's do it,
let's fire everybody and do that. Yeah,
and they would not see an ethical qualm with it.
No.
Yeah.
No,
because it saves time, money, energy, effort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pads the bottom line.
I mean, yeah, I can't argue with you.
That's, and it's hard to, as you know, educators for me in sales is like, that's the hard battle is like, you need to be able to communicate. But now they're like, why? This thing do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Do it well. Better me. I mean, yeah, but.
Still not you. Yeah.
You're going to lose your job to that thing, too. Probably.
Not an insignificant chance. I mean,
especially when I now go to half the fast food restaurants and just order at a kiosk anyway.
Right.
Sure.
Like, I mean, more and more things are, I don't know.
Yeah, the
old
real
man yelling at robot over
sure,
here.
Sure, sure, sure.
The real disaster of this whole AI thing is that AI is making the art, the poetry, and the movies, and we're still having to, you know, grunt at the job. And it's like, I wanted to do the other thing. I want the AI to, you know, make big rocks into little rocks so that more people can write poetry. It's the wrong, you know, I don't
but
know.
What if I gave you an audiobook of Werner Herzog reading AI poetry?
That's real.
Yeah, but what if Wes Anderson made Harry Potter?
Oh, God.
Ugh. Yeah. Ugh.
God, I hate it. I hate it so much. And you can usually tell. When I see something come across my algorithm, I don't usually have to click on it to have it confirmed for me that an AI made it. No, that's not always the case. I mean, there's some good stuff out there. But I just, like, also this conversation of people being like, well, it's still art. I had to like put in the prompts and stuff. Like, what are you fucking talking about, dude? Get real.
Mm-hmm.
Be real for 5 seconds. Stop. I don't know. I agree. Like, I don't know how we can talk about this without turning into three old men yelling at clouds, but it is a problem. And I don't know that the industry is going to like deal with it very well.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think the recent sort of, the SAG,
strike
settlement will no longer allow like AI generated images of, you know, human actors, you know, so Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher sort of appearing posthumously, you know, and
things. You can't use AI to make that happen. Yeah. That doesn't mean you can't use
their image.
Yeah. Their image and CG artists to make their
image. But they get paid though when you do that still. Their estates do. Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. And I know that AI writing was something that was covered in the WGA agreement too. Mm-hmm. So obviously the unions are worried about this and trying to.
They didn't say anything about AI ADR.
Nope. I don't guess.
I didn't read all the nuances.
I didn't either, but it wouldn't surprise me if like that's a place where they cut corners, right?
I mean, that's not Matt. I didn't see Madam Web.
It's not good.
But ADR was a big part of that, and it could have been AI.
There's no way to know. And that's, I guess that's what's frustrating, is like knowing that nobody has to issue the disclaimer, right? This is up to film journalists and film fans themselves to find out and disseminate the information.
Right.
And that just kills the fun of it. If I'm just questioning whether this thing is real or not.
Well, it's just like this mindset of like, this is going to solve all of our problems. Like, no, it's just going to create new problems we didn't foresee. Like, nothing, it is only going to give you solutions that we've already thought of. It's not going to create new ideas. And that's sort of the problem with it. It's not actually thinking. It is just like, you know, if thens ad infinitum to get shit to spit out.
Yeah.
It's not really, you know, now can these things, do they have machine learning and yet and all kinds of stuff that I don't fully understand? Sure. Is this stuff more advanced than I'm probably aware of? Almost certainly. But I do not believe that we have reached a point of, you know, sentient, you know, algorithmic code.
Yeah.
I guess let's talk about something else. We had to address it, but let's get into like the actual movie.
Okay.
Yeah, Go ahead. It's pretty fucking funny. I guess I want to start with sort of, oh, go ahead, Arthur.
Go ahead.
I just sort of lethal force and pacifism, being nice, violence and doing it. We get lip service paid to this, right? We get the nobody ever wins a fight line, which, great, you got to keep that one. You simply have to keep that. But we don't...
Cake and eat it, too.
Elwood Dalton is not presented as having a martial artist's ethos the way 89 Roadhouse Dalton is, right? We get a little bit of it, but not much. And it makes me feel like the stunt people, the people who knew how to fight, weren't really consulted. Roadhouse was, you know, made by stunt people, much like Smokey and the Bandit before it and John Wick after it. Like, that's sort of the where that movie comes from. And so I think when you have people who know about fighting, talking about fighting, like, that reality makes it into the movie a little bit more, even if the screenwriters are not the ones that, you know, came up with these lines or whatever.
Well, the one, I guess he does Hollywood break the one guy, so he does kill one guy.
He kills a bunch of people.
Oh, I guess he kills the guys on the boat, yeah.
He kills all the guys on the boat.
I was thinking the sort of last big moment is when he kills Conor McGregor and he doesn't.
Yes.
It's sort of like the cheat, you know, of it, but I guess there are bodies before that.
Yeah, he piles up a couple.
The dude just straight up murders at the pool. He punches him in the throat and drowns him.
And explains to him how he has killed him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is like a cool, funny, scary moment and that's kind of funny.
Pops him in the chest a few times for good measure.
Well, yeah, very funny for the cop to point out, like, but that's not going to work. And he's like, probably not, but it'll confuse him. He's like, okay, then why are we even doing this bit if we all know that that's not how forensics works? Like, what are we doing here, people? And that's a large way to feel about many stretches of this movie is, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me something, jettison this entirely or develop it into a real subplot, right? And again, like, this idea that Dalton is, you know, a guy with a long fuse, but once he gets angry, he can't let it go, is just like so underbaked and not really.
Yes.
Like, the choice to do lethal violence carries weight in 89's Roadhouse. It is a escalation of what has been happening in the movie.
Well, and the movie seems to indicate that the UFC fight was like blind rage.
Yes. We don't get any backstory on that to like make us understand why he lost control.
There's just like a moment there, and if you let the Hulk out, he blacks out, and we don't know. He doesn't black out. He just decides, okay, I'm going to start killing folk now.
Yeah,
which is a very calculated thing to me.
Yeah,
he doesn't have like a mental break at the bookstore when he realizes what's happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't go to a fugue state.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, okay, well, that's how you're playing it. You ruin this girl's life, I'm going to ruin yours.
And we don't get...
I mean, fair, but...
Sure.
It's not... Yeah.
We don't get any of his interiority, really, though, right? Like, in 89, you've got scenes with Kelly Lynch, you've got scenes with Sam Elliott, you've got scenes with... I forget his name. The guy that owns the bar. Tillman?
Sure.
I forget the actor's name. But anyway, you've got...
I honest to goodness don't remember much of Roadhouse Original at all.
You're missing out. The old man who rents him the loft. My point is, there's like four or five characters in 89 Roadhouse that like give Dalton somebody to talk to, like a sounding board. and we get some like hints of interiority and like what this like larger deal is. Like that is what makes that movie work. It's the same thing that like makes John Wick work. It, Keanu, yes. Swayze, they are like taking kind of archetypal guys and like archetypal movie characters and turning them into like real people. Let's say Swayze,
real-ish.
Swayze's Dalton and Roadhouse a little bit more than John Wick, but like real-ish enough that like I can, you can put some emotion of your own into these characters and like breathe life into the action movie. And what we have in Neo Roadhouse is, you know, yeah, Arthur's right. Like the fights are not terrible. I like them. I think I'm between the two of you. I'm not as mad as you are, and I don't like them as much as Arthur does. But you know, if we accept the premise that this is a junk fight movie, as they did on The Big Picture, then I guess we can get a little bit more on board with it. But even if we accept that premise, the original Roadhouse is a better junk fight movie with real characters.
Yeah.
And I guess that's my biggest complaint is like, you can make this kind of movie and still make a real movie. You don't have, it doesn't have to be either or. It can be fun and still be, you know, about real feelings. I don't know. That's sort of my biggest, that and sort of a not knowing what the tone is. It's sort of having too many. Those are sort of my two biggest like frustrations, especially compared to the original, is just like a lack of character chemistry and a lack of character believability. And then just a lack of tonal mastery, because it's unclear always. It's not always clear when this is supposed to be serious and when this is supposed to be funny. It's kind of like, I guess that's not true. It is clear. It's just kind of mishmashed when it goes camp and when it goes gritty. That's sort of my big takeaway on like the tonal issues with this.
Well, there are moments in the movie where I'm not sure if I wasn't paying attention or if there's a plot hole. For instance, when Dalton leaves, did he not just steal like $1 million? Where's that at?
He left it with the bookstore.
He left it with the book. He does. I remember that. Okay, he does leave it at the bookstore. That's right.
I forgot about that too.
But I kept wondering about the money. I was like, for a long time, they did eventually get answered. I went, oh, well, I guess that makes sense.
Well, and say what you will about sort of the male gaze in 1989's Roadhouse. At least Kelly Lynch doesn't end up a damsel in distress by the end of the movie.
Right.
And this movie tries to have its cake and eat it too by like having Ellie free herself as Dalton finds her.
Yeah.
But boy, is that some like 2020s, we're woke, we promise, having its cake and eating its too bullshit. Like, I don't know. So it's not like the original Roadhouse without its problems. Like it's got some pretty gross stuff in it. Again, like very 80s film politics regarding like the depiction of women and women's bodies, all that kind of stuff. But again, it's got like some, I don't know. Arthur, let's talk about the music. Do you think anything is lost by not having one band? Do you think it's actually better to have like multiple musical acts throughout Roadhouse 24?
I mean, I don't know that it feeds anything thematically. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fun variety. It's the only time
any good at all. I mean, because the score is nothing.
No. But that's, I guess, maybe what I'm lamenting is, again, like having characters who know Dalton prior to the events of the movie, right? Because we miss out on having, I forget that, the guitar player's name. But they, you know, have that fight. Oh, I thought you'd be bigger. Oh, you play guitar good for Blind White Boy. Like they have this relationship and this rapport. And again, it's just another character that this movie doesn't have for it to like hang real moments on. And it's longer than the original too, isn't it?
It's 2 hours.
I think the original like 145?
Probably.
150? I know it's not 2 hours.
They just added 15 more minutes of McGregor walking around.
Him
maniacally climbing a ladder.
Dude, he's so funny.
You driving that boat? You're for it.
He's a guy that I don't like. Like
in real life,
Yeah. He's a fighter that I've had disdain for a while, but he's very good in this. Like, he's not a good actor. He's a ham. He's a good presence.
Yeah. He's got charisma.
Yes.
For days.
Yes, he does.
Absolutely. Well, he shows you like why he became a popular. Like he was cutting wrestling promos as a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
Like very smart career about decision.
Yeah.
So like he's a guy that understands
rooster of a man.
He understands image enough that he could have like a real career as an actor.
Yeah.
I'm curious what happens next for him because he does pop in this. Even if he's not great.
Yeah, you put him in a Fast and the Furious, call it a day.
Yeah. He just needs some, you know, give him some acting lessons.
He's the villain in Fast 11, and then he joins the family in Fast 12, is the rinse and repeat.
Or don't you mean Fast X Part 2?
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do the
Fast
number.
Triple X with all that.
When's the one where they
shot?
Go into another universe?
Yeah, when are they going to do that?
When they fight the alien, call me.
I can't wait.
The multiverse of
the
madness.
Men in Black crossover.
It's just like the first like poorly received.
That's not. I mean, what was Men in Black supposed to cross over with? Was it Fast or was it
Jump Street?
Was it Jump Street?
Yeah, it was gonna be. They were gonna go be Men in Black. I believe was the leaked Sony news when the hacks happened. Yeah, so interesting. Weird how
maybe a cyber Knox attack. Maybe Knox is an alien and the Men in Black are going to show up to investigate him.
Because he's wearing
Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones versus Conor McGregor.
The alien's wearing a Conor McGregor suit. Yes. Yeah.
Pushing up my glasses to tell you guys actually Sony owns Men in Black and they would never work with MGM Amazon.
Oh,
sorry.
It's too bad.
I hate to be a realist about it.
Got a better chance of the Men in Black showing up in the Marvel Universe again than we do.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Going back home.
Back where they belong. What do we think this heralds for Gyllenhaal? Let's do a little bit of actor career speculation. We haven't done that in a while. We all like Gyllenhaal here, right?
Yeah. I think Gyllenhaal got paid.
Yeah.
And Gyllenhaal now has the time to pick what he wants to do next, which is a good thing.
You don't think he wanted to do this? You think an agent told him this was a good idea?
I'm sure he's like, oh, this will be fun. I'll get to work out.
I mean, he's done stuff. I mean, he did Life.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done this sort of.
He got paid to work out and get ripped.
Southpaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure he thought this is fun and whatever and, mm-hmm. you know, not a bad opportunity. But he thought, I will get paid and I will do something serious now.
Yeah.
I'm sure is what's next.
He did Ambulance. I mean, he's worked with Michael Bay. I mean, this isn't that far of a stretch.
Man,
from...
he is so wild-eyed in Ambulance, too.
He's got an untitled Guy Ritchie film coming up next.
I think I heard about that. Yeah. That Guy Ritchie had another movie coming up soon.
That'll be
Guy
good.
Guy Ritchie cannot stop. He is
he
just
had two
like
last year. He's got one this year.
He's
got
cranking
one
them out.
Coming out. I know.
He's got the Netflix show that's expanding upon the last pop big hit
he's
he had.
Got the Mirror Mad of Unhappy Gentlemen's Esquires or something.
What?
Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the title.
Yeah. It looks bad.
Cavill.
I do like Cavill. Like,
I like Guy Ritchie.
Tongue out.
I haven't seen
Machine Gun going.
I need to see The Gentleman.
I was
going to try to do like this McConaughey marathon one day because I wanted to watch that and a couple of other things, but none of them were streaming anymore. Mm. Gentleman is no longer on Netflix, even though there's now a series about it on there.
Deranged.
Yes, insane. Somebody also mentioned that Ghostbusters Afterlife is not streaming anywhere with the sequel now in theaters.
For real?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Keisha and I rented it last week so we could, because she hadn't seen Afterlife.
That's probably why.
Make rentals.
Yeah.
Make rentals happen.
Sony trying to make rental money.
Probably.
Wow. Anyway. What a weird industry.
I like Jill. I mean, yeah, I think Gyllenhaal just takes the paycheck and does something he's more passionate about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's having fun here. Like, I don't think he's mad about being here.
Yeah, no. I don't think he's phoning it in or anything like that.
Words out of my mouth.
He's not an actor who's above doing this type of movie.
No.
Like, he's not just chasing the next prestige thing. He's I think, got that sort of... I don't know, he's an... I hear stories about him that he's kind of a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a dip.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he seems to have some sort of sense of humor about his career, I think, or he wouldn't do bits for Saturday Night Live with John Mulaney, or, you know, because I think him and Mulaney are friends. And,
yeah, the Sack Lunch Bunch thing. Yeah, he definitely is a guy that I would not be surprised to learn, like, every crew that's ever worked with him doesn't like him.
Well, I've heard horror stories about, like, wildlife when he was here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, he set up a kind of tent to not have to deal with the commoners.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe he's just highly introverted and anxious about social situations.
Fame's bad for your brain. It's not good for you.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
And it's hard. I mean, and it's hard to be on that pedestal because if you do have social issues or, you know, social disorders or anxieties or depression or any of those things
just
that
exacerbates,
like,
all those
make
issues.
You seem like a jerk, then
absolutely.
People are going to label you a jerk. So it's hard to know.
Sure.
But he seems like a funny guy.
I think you're right about him having a sense of humor about, like, his career and his persona, for sure.
I just don't think he's above certain types of projects.
Yeah.
I kind of respect that. Yeah.
Well, and is there like a rehab kind of thing going on? Because he was one of Taylor Swift's boyfriends, right?
No.
Who am I thinking of?
No,
he was.
He was.
Yeah, but it's been a
while. Whoa, really?
Yeah.
No, God. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think it's that. I mean, I think it's been enough time.
Okay.
I also don't know that the crossover of Swifties and Gyllenhaal people would have been like...
Yeah, I wonder what that Venn diagram looks like.
You know what
like.
I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they're a powerful contingent.
Now, when the Kelsey breakup happens, that's going to be a...
You say when. I mean, if. I mean, they seem very happy. I don't know.
I mean, she's got records to make, bro.
She needs fodder. I know, as far as everyone's love life, I just wish everyone to be happy.
I don't think anybody with that much money is actually happy.
Well, that's probably
sort of Dalton's theory.
The ghost of Christmas past comes and says something to you. Yeah.
Marley rattling chains at you, et cetera.
Yeah.
Let's get off onto a different subject before the Swifties come for
us. Is there another
subject? I mean, this movie is thin. The original, as Arthur said, has like some real sort of small town, you know, machination stuff. And obviously that's kind of thin too, but it's at least...
I mean, it's kind of here with Ben Brandt and like
wanting to
take over the island and reestablish the Brandt name.
He's got like at least...
But he's also got all these like criminal, like, which again, another kind of fault of the movie is like we don't see the outside criminal pressure on Brandt.
No,
we're told that like he's borrowed this money and people are going to come for him, but like that's never apparent.
No, it never like comes to a head.
Yeah, and his dad's kind of a jerk.
Yeah,
right.
We don't ever. He's a voice on the phone.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy, are they? Man, maybe they were sort of teeing up Roadhouse sequel. I don't like Dalton leaving town at the end.
Oh, I think. Yeah, I mean, I think a sequel's definitely. I think Knox walking out is a for sure thing.
That's sort of what
and him getting on the bus. I think both of those are pretty key.
What do you think this movie did as far as streams? Do you think it's?
Most watched any movie on Amazon right now.
I was going to say, here's the thing about it. Like, and we're never going to get these numbers, right? We're never going to see those numbers. Amazon's good at promoting their stuff in a way that Netflix, for whatever reason,
they bury everything on Netflix. Yeah,
it's the most counterintuitive thing I can imagine. Like,
Amazon's pretty good about spacing their releases out too.
But I've seen ads for this everywhere.
Yep,
it's been high. I mean, I would say it's probably did. I mean, I've seen multiple. I mean, multiple people log it this weekend on Letterboxd compared to Immaculate or I mean, I've seen a few people do Late Night with the Devil and
I've seen a few of those.
I don't think I've seen like two people do Ghostbusters. I've seen more Roadhouses than Ghostbusters.
Okay.
You know,
I think it's like the most popular thing on Letterboxd this week behind Dune 2. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are watching. I mean, Gyllenhaal's got a huge end with the filmies.
Yep. I think this probably did better.
Lyman's got a pretty decent track record.
Yeah. I think this did better as a streaming exclusive than it would have done in theaters. Probably. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. I think the business decision makes sense as much as I think this would have been. Like, look, I should have been able to go to Flick's Brewhouse and get a little sloppy watching this dog turd. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is exactly that kind of movie.
Sounds like the better way to watch it.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's not terrible. I just like it's not going to become a cult classic either. I can see it.
You say that.
You're right. As soon as I said it, I started to be like, well, you know. Prime is sort of a
for?
Well, Prime is sort of a service where things can break through, right? Even something like Saltburn, who's like, you watch that and go, who is this for? That's a movie that does like have
Second
real
life.
Legs on Prime and like become a meme and sort of start to become something people talk about and know about. So it has a cultural footprint now in a way that it simply didn't after its theatrical run. With this opening big on streaming, Arthur's right. There is like every possibility that this turns into, you know, a sequelized franchise. They, you know, probably don't bring Doug Liman back because he talks so much shit about them not giving it a theatrical release. But, you know, I Arthur's right. Like, they definitely probably want more of these. As much pain as it causes me to say
that. It didn't cost that much.
Memes.
I can't imagine this cost more. I'm sure it cost more than it should have.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it cost more than 90.
Because I mean,
be
you
shocked.
Have three sets.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the Roadhouse and then two boats.
Yeah, and all the fires
and
digital.
The house, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest budget is probably Gyllenhaal, McGregor, and Lyman.
Yeah.
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 I mean, those are your, I think, biggest costs.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, they had drove a car into that bar, and that looked like that could have been a set. But yeah, I think you're right. Salaries is probably where most of the money went. I don't know. It certainly didn't go towards the fight choreography, which is, again, fine, but nothing special. And I don't know that the original is anything special either, but it's, I don't know, it's very fun and gritty and tactile. Mm-hmm. And this is flashy in a way that's like, doesn't really work with either tone it's going for, either the camp or the grit. I think the style of fight shooting that they've done, again, it just makes me think of Scott Adkins movies, which is a different kind of movie than this.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. And I am just such a fan of the original Roadhouse fights because they look barely choreographed. They truly it is just like dudes wailing on each other.
Right.
And it looks really good. Because everybody that's wailing on each other seems like they know how to handle themselves, mm-hmm. including Swayze.
Well, and they have a weird way, a better way of like timing the lines. Like the one-liners are kind of groaners in this.
Yeah,
the one-liners are much better, and they set them up in such a way where after you know Sam Elliott punches you in the knee and says "hurts like hell, don't it?"
Yeah.
or whatever, you know, it's like it's really funny.
Yeah,
and it doesn't have that, you know.
And I just don't know that anybody alive has ever been as sexy as Sam Elliott is in Roadhouse. Truly.
Sure.
Truly maybe the sexiest any human being has ever been. And I just, I don't have that.
Yeah.
And I know that that's like, we love to beat the drum for like movies aren't horny anymore. And obviously the last couple of years have kind of changed that. But Roadhouse is a sexy movie. In this
shirtless Tai Chi.
Shirtless Tai Chi by the lake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People smooching. Ladies getting naked at the bar. Like, again, it's like
kind of... wants to do that with that little beach getaway that they take.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it tries to do some of that, but it just feels manufactured, maybe.
Yeah.
But probably the best sort of moment of the movie as far as you're like, man, that looks like fun.
Beach chairs in the like the parts of the keys.
I
want to
be there.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go do that. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a good day.
One of the best looking shots of the movie. We didn't talk at all about like the great nature photography and silence last week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like the only moment of this movie where we're like, damn, the Florida Keys are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not a beach person, but I would do that.
Same.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree that like that's as close as this movie gets to like really trying to develop that relationship. And it just really doesn't. You know, it never really comes together as anything more than a perfunctory screenplay, you know, contrivance. I don't really have anything else on this.
I don't either.
I didn't make many notes because it is pretty
well,
thin.
I think it's time to pull the boat into the dock.
All right. And blow it up. What's the verdict? Shelf or trash? Or what do you say? Yeah,
well, I guess the better question is, does this ever get a physical release?
I don't know that MGM, or I don't know that Amazon's put anything out on physical media.
Yeah.
I don't know if Air ever hit Blu-ray or not.
Wow.
So that'd be an interesting question. I mean, if the demand was there, I think they would.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've seen that enough from Disney Plus or Netflix.
Well, with the caveat of the shelf being digital, you know, you can buy, right?
I think that Dalton mentioned, you know, I wouldn't put this in, you know, he wouldn't put it in theaters. Bezos didn't put it in theaters. And yeah, I think streaming's where this exists. And I think that's a fine place for it because I think that's where it's going to
come. Did you take the cop-out pick? Did you take shelf or trash or stream and you pick stream? Is that what you just did?
No, I said streaming is where it's going to live.
It sounds like you copped out.
No, I said streaming is where it's going to live.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's trash.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, streaming is where it exists. And I think in 35 years, when we get to episode 2217 and we watch Roadhouse 2079.
Roadhouse
2059. Sorry, 2059.
Roadhouse would make it cyberpunk.
We'll have a better idea of the cultural gravitas of 2024 as a Roadhouse.
Hold on, I actually do need to make a note in my phone that says Roadhouse but cyberpunk. I think I could sell that shit. Actually,
yeah,
I think you could.
Yeah,
I think you could.
Oh, it's like a techno rave.
Yeah.
Because like
people got like cyborg parts and stuff.
I think because here again is the thing is like the thing about cyberpunk is that dystopian future,
mm-hmm.
which is very much kind of like rural 80s.
Yes.
And that is kind of gritty and poverty stricken. And that's where Roadhouse culture flared. And the Roadhouse is like the prime like underground sort of network where people of all sorts of ilks and walk of lives can. And that's again a part of, like, and I think that's part of this movie is like,
I'd watch that movie
in 2024. That sort of Roadhouse culture doesn't exist. Like, I buy this being a place in the Keys. Like, mm-hmm. I buy this being a bar. But, like, the idea of, yeah, Jeff over the corner, like, his third trailer just blew up because of meth, and he's on the run from the cops, but he pays his tab, and I don't say anything.
Yeah.
And the local sheriff's also there drinking, and he's on the payroll of somebody else, and he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure. Like, don't get me wrong. I've had a drink in a trailer bar in Sulphur. So, like, these places exist.
They do.
But you're right, though, that they don't, like, especially in, like, a metropolitan area, you don't have, like, you got dive bars and gentrified bars and sometimes some stuff in between, but that's pretty much, like, what you got. And it's interesting how this sort of, like...
I just think maybe setting this in a more rural place would have maybe helped that.
Yeah. As opposed
because
to like
the Florida Keys feels like a destination.
Yeah, it's a vacation place. Yeah. That's an interesting read.
And there's
on
nothing
this.
About the Roadhouse that seems like, again, because we don't have that world building, we don't have those characters. Like, It's just a bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing else about it. Like, there's no character to the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Itself.
Yeah. It doesn't have a fun name. The Double Deuce.
It's the Roadhouse.
It's the Roadhouse.
It's funny because it's the Roadhouse.
That's a, such an unpaid off bit.
That, well, there's boat. The boat. The boat is funny.
The boat is the payoff there, I guess.
Yeah.
But Jessica Williams is so funny and is like that, that moment of patter between the two of them just doesn't trash for me as well, by the way, if you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Trash for you too.
Yeah.
One,
yeah.
Two, three. Trash.
Yeah. Trash. Yeah. And we're just sort of like, it really just bringing talking. This slowly bringing this into the station.
Well, it's a boat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It takes a lot longer. Yeah,
yeah. Nobody.
Someone's guiding it to the trailer.
Hey, no wakes around the pier, buddy. Come on.
Yeah, nobody turned me around. No one tried to turn me around. Yeah, but it's still trash. Yeah,
yeah. 10 miles an hour or less here at the pier. Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah, good. This isn't the hill I'm going to die on.
No.
No.
All right, well, we're probably wrong. I don't think we are. But if we are, Dalton can tell you how we can tell us we're wrong about this hidden gem.
Yeah, Roadhouse 2020.
Hidden gem.
Roadhouse 2024 Defenders.
Where Dalton got his name.
Yes, I'm named after a movie that is 33 years younger than me. If you want to talk to me about my name, you can email the show, goodtrashgenrecast@gmail.com. Are you going to name your child Knox? Let us know. GoodTrashGenreCast@gmail.com. Or are you going to not name your kid Knox? That's a very popular name these days. I don't know if you know that. Yeah. What else? Week, you can find us on Letter. You want to talk to me about Roadhouse? Comment on my Letterboxd review. I'm Dollywood Squares on Letterboxd and on Instagram. These guys are pretty much their names in most places. You can find us at Good Trash Media all over the internet. Last but certainly not least, if you go to patreon.com/GTM, you can help support this show, help us keep the lights on, and get a little something for yourself along the way. If you give enough, you can pick a movie for us to discuss here on this very show, just like Keithan did last week when we discussed Martin Scorsese's Silence. You can also get a picture sent to your house. I don't mean a framed photograph. I mean a motion picture. On DVD or Blu-ray, depending on what level you give at. All that info there for you at patreon.com/GTM. I don't believe I have anything else to plug other than the live show that I've stopped plugging since it's regular now. But, you know, if you haven't heard about this, I do a live show Thursdays at 7 o'clock, Film Row, at Rodeo Cinema on Film Row, to be specific. Alex Sanchez and I, actor of Bugman and Chicken House, and Country Gold, I think he's in that one too. Arrows of Outrageous Fortune, he's been around. His movies are on Tubi, which is on TV. Anyway, Thursday, 7 p.m., Rodeo Cinema on Film Row. Alex and I screen public domain films and talk during them and over them. And we have a lovely little time. Come check it out. Arthur, I believe I have a host pick this month.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. He's so enthused about it, too.
Oh, I'm scared.
You should be. You should always be afraid of my host picks.
Yeah, because sometimes you inflict a host pick on us.
I've done it. I have.
Not like you, though. Like, you can't talk.
No, that's true.
You can't say a word.
I did make you guys watch Running Scared, though, and I will forever to live that down.
That's true.
A movie I stand by.
Many moons ago.
Guys watch Lords of Salem. So
that was like 9 years ago.
That was a pretty good movie.
That was longer years
ago.
That
was even longer. Yeah, that was a long time ago. This week... So I knew that we were going to be discussing Martin Scorsese's Silence. Arthur does not like that. That was supposed to be a surprise for us. And I talked to Keithan and convinced him to tell me his little tricks and schemes.
I left a note on his Patreon reward.
He sent me a picture of the note. He sent me a picture of the note you sent him about my silver tongue and how I should not be trusted.
Okay, I need to see this later.
But I tell you all that, listener, to tell you this. The arrangement between Keithan and myself was that my pick had to coincide with his pick in some way for him to tell me what
the
movie was about.
So it's a sandwich with Roadhouse being the meat.
Yes. Okay. You're so right. We are...
The big...
Now, Dustin...
Hams of Conor McGregor just slapped in the middle.
Now, Dustin, if you were thinking to yourself, my sandwich on one side is an East meets West tale of Westerners in Japan in the 1600s. And in the middle, you've got the meat of a bad... Okay.
Bad
action movie.
It's processed
remake.
Deli meat.
Processed deli meat.
You were right the first time, yeah.
A bad action movie remake.
On the left, we have artisan, finely crafted baked daily bread.
Yes.
In the middle, we have Oscar Mayer processed bologna.
And then on the bottom of the sandwich, we have the combination of East meets West and absolute dudes rock bullshit in Edward Zwick's Tom Cruise's The Last Samurai.
And we talk about The Last Movie Star, baby.
We will be talking about The Last Movie Star, and we will be talking about how The Last Samurai is actually Ken Watanabe. A less white savior movie than you would think, but you know what? It's still probably one of those. I can't wait to talk about it.
All right, that sounds great. Well, you keep watching, we'll keep talking, and we'll see you all next time.